In this week, on the 18th of December, 1987, Tom Fashanu's 12th goal of the season was enough for the Dons to beat Norwich City and move up to seventh place in the First Division table. When I agreed to take to coach Wimbledon at the start of the season, I was under the impression Fashanu was just a big, strong forward who liked to put himself a bit, England number two Don Howe said. But he's improving all the time, so much so that I wouldn't rule him out of the England picture. I think most people would. We're the Small Wombles. We're back. Hello, dear listener. Welcome. Oh, do you know, we had the most exciting show lined up for you.
We had all the guests,
Yeah.
all the regulars back, in fact.
We had all the regulars back. It was gonna be flying. Niall Monfrere, Niall Cooper was gonna come in. He was gonna tell us all about the football governance bill and whatever it is. He's apparently in a pub, which I just don't do because the guy does not drink. So I don't know what he's doing there. Karaoke, God forbid.
He's not doing karaoke whilst not drinking.
Well, that's just not humanly
That
possible.
can't be, that is not possible.
That's right. It's like kebabs. You need to be able to drink
Yeah.
to enjoy. Anyhow, we're not going to reveal who our other guest was, but he's coming back. So hopefully next week we'll do the big intro in our festive Christmas special. We haven't planned
Because
a
that would be
Christmas
like the
special.
23rd, wouldn't it? So that could be our
Exactly.
special for the holidays.
It'll be our special holiday edition where we'll do something. Anyhow, it'll be really exciting. So this week it's just myself, Matt Cooper, and regular. Do you know, I'm promoting you, Adam. I'm promoting, giving you a title, Matt Cooper, and our producer, Adam Proctor.
Oh, that's thank you very much.
There you are. You've always been that, but that's how I see you. So this week, producer, editor, all round good guy. Anyhow, this week we're going to have a chat about the Doncaster match and the footballing things. We'll have a look back over the DTB AGM, albeit very briefly, because I wasn't there. Adam was there for the last 5 minutes, which sounded like it was a lot of fun. And we'll just have a chat about some other bits and bobs as well. Obviously, we'd like to talk more about the football governance bill, which Monfrere would usually do. But you know what? I think we'll just wake up. Yeah, we'll have a go. We'll see what happens. What's the worst? We'll change football here. That's the way it's going to work. Anyhow, Adam, we were both there for the Doncaster match. That was good fun. Can I say that it was the third best win of the season after the two franchise games? So,
So that makes it technically the first best win, obviously,
yeah, you
because the
know.
other two don't count.
But it was, because I think we were looking for a performance like that, a hard-fought performance that would get us the 3 points against a side in the top six or seven. And so far, that is where our weakness has been. We played brilliantly to come back again, almost spectacular draw against Port Vale. It didn't quite come off. We did really well against Walsall, obviously lost to them, and Notts County as well. So we needed a victory over one of them, and this was just a brilliant performance. But weird, because in the first, I think it was 15-20 minutes, they had two gilt-edged chances to take the lead. I mean,
We were fortunate with some of that stuff. I mean, clearly they didn't understand where the goal was, which was rather nice. So that was quite good. But yeah, it was a well battled out game, and I think I watched a bit of the match they uncovered. I've not actually managed to catch any of the other stuff. It was a bit of a whirlwind weekend, but that's the kind of game we need to win, and we did it.
and we did, and it was, and we were brilliant. And I'm really interested in this formation now, because obviously JJ's come in, and his whole thing was what's it, 5-3-2, primarily. That's been held two strikers up. But this is a new formation, which is kind of, and I think I'm right in saying 3-4-2-1.
Yeah, that's
That
it. That
adds
is
up
it.
to
That is it.
yeah, three
Yeah.
four, 3-4-2-1.
I mean, I have to look at the BBC Sport to make sure you've got it right. But
But
yeah,
what
no,
it's
it's a good
done,
lineup.
is it's brought the best out of Josh Kelly, because I think all of us were thinking that in January he would be loaned out, probably back down to Solihull Moors or someone else in the conference, get his confidence back, and then maybe come back to us towards the end of the season or the following season. But he's just he's been a revelation. Certainly his quick thinking was what led to the goal, you know, intercepting that dreadful pass, but they cross it in, and then, you know, Matty Stevens is now just on fire at the moment. He's magnificent. But we talked about this on the weekend. My thing with Matty Stevens is he is a goal poacher. He is a fox in the box sort of person. He's not an Ahmadi. He's not an Ayabasal. He's not that sort of player. What he can do is he can, you know, good deliveries into him, and he's working in our team in our formation. So he would need to go somewhere else if he went anywhere that would play this sort of style of football. And my understanding is that
He's not going anywhere, surely.
we just got him somewhere. So my sense is that he wouldn't. Anyhow, all of this will be cut, dear listener. You won't have to listen to any of this bobbins. We're back. But yeah, so I guess the big thing for me now, the logical thing is, do we have to worry about the January transfer window?
I don't think so. I think we have to worry about getting some people in to replace our injuries. But I don't think we need to worry about losing anyone specifically. I don't feel like, yeah, we've had a good season, but there's no one like who's like, yeah, okay, Kelly, Stevens, you know, there's a few players who have been doing really well, but I don't think anyone's like shining out like megastars again. So I don't think that we have too much to worry about. And I think maybe we can negotiate, you know, maybe there's some pushback, you know, that there might be some, they might come and say, oh, let's get some players. But I don't think we'd make as much money as potentially selling a few in the summer, which if we had a really, if we have a playoff run and we do well in the playoffs, that would, you know, that would crank up the price of lots of players, which I mean, I would totally, if we did well in the playoffs and whatever happened, if we're in the playoffs, I mean, that would be blinding. But if whatever happens, I would totally sell players at that point and be like, well, we're either going to not perform as well in League Two or we're going to come straight back down from League One. I think that would be a semi-sensible kind of idea. So I don't feel like we're going to lose anyone now. I think we're only going to increase their value over the second half of the season if we can plug the gap of the injuries and the cards and stuff like that, because our squad depth is still pretty shallow, I think, based on what's happened.
Weirdly, it's shallow now, but I think we've got, you know, and we'll go through them in a minute and see if I've got it right. I think we've got about eight people out at the moment. What was interesting is we ran into at the Port Vale game we talked about, Noel and I ran into Terry Skiverton, and we were talking about the squad and about selling players. And what he said was, this time we don't have that. You know, that star player. We've got a good squad. We've got a good team, and they get on. Now, Matty's been banging in the goals, but you know, you can equally say that a lot of that has been created by the brilliant work of Tilly and Josh Nerval. I mean, and I have a feeling. Well, I know Tilly's out of contract in the summer, so you know, obviously a decent signing in the January window would be to keep him on. We've got this team ethic, really, rather than star players. So it's where that next exceptional player comes from, I think, is going to be interesting.
I was going to say, I honestly think Nerfville is going to be that, but but he needs another season and a half at least. I think he is turning into what could be a potentially star player. He's playing blinding games, as far as I'm concerned. And in terms of like how much he's improved, I'm well impressed. But he's not. But like you say, I think you're right. I think we're playing like a team, and so everyone works together really well, which means you can't just sort of take that player and drop that player into another squad, because they wouldn't adapt to the same, you know, the formation, the kind of setup and all that stuff as quick. Whereas, yeah, in previous seasons, I think we could say there was not necessarily carrying the team, but there was individuals who were doing way more in that sense than we've had this time. Whereas it feels more like a team than there being individuals who might be carrying the team. But I don't really feel they ever carried the team, but you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and it... I mean, I don't think we'd do as well without Matty Stevens, but
agreed.
But clearly, when we lost Ayo Basal and Al Hamadi, you know, that completely derailed our seasons.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I haven't looked up was like, it sounded like quite a lot of people are scoring goals, and I don't know what the averages are now, but it feels like, or at least setting up goals, that kind of stuff. And again, it's less worrying about working with an individual. You've got a few players who got some confidence to score, and a bunch of other players who've got some confidence to get balls into positions where other players will score.
Yeah, I know. And then we got Tilly, who can just every now and again just goes, okay, I'll just score 30 yards. I'll go, I've got top bids.
Yeah, true.
But it's interesting about the squad depth, because bear in mind that we've just taken on, you know, one of the teams that are going to be tipped for promotion, at least the playoffs. And in this formation, we did brilliantly. And you wonder, in actual fact, who on this list that I have in front of me now, and I have a feeling I'm probably missing people, who would make that team. So you've got Callum Maycock, Miles Hippolyte, Joe Lewis, James Ball, Jake Reeves, Aaron Sasu, and Ryan McLean. I mean, and certainly the last two, Aaron and Ryan, I mean, you know, it's going to take them a while to get back into it. Although it'd be quite interesting to see, because I think Aaron Sasu and Josh Neuville, they were that similar playing style on the wing. So, you know, it might be quite nice to give Josh a break.
That's the thing, it's options.
Yeah, but that's the thing. So the issue is, if we get new players in, who drops out of this? And now we've got Sam. We've got two one month loans in, haven't we? And Sam Hutchinson started on Saturday. I genuinely thought he was going to be sent off within 15 minutes. Getting a yellow after 7 minutes. I thought that's it. He's gone.
That's a classic, isn't it? That's so early on.
So I was just like, oh, that's it. But he was great. He was brilliant. So, you know, and obviously it could be a situation that he comes in and, you know, gets a contract that's until the end of the season.
I mean, it's talking about yellows, right? That's the funny thing is I was looking at this, yeah. Obviously the game last season, we had two reds. Two of our players were sent off right at the end. The season before that, it was six yellows. And this game against Doncaster was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on their team. 6, 7, 8 yellow cards. It's like ridiculous. Why, whenever we play Doncaster, is it all yellows or reds? Like, what is going on?
It's crazy. I mean, we're just too. So, I mean, like, we really battled it out. I mean, the ball was not. There was some bloke behind me who kept screaming, "Get the ball down! Get the ball down!" Oh, wait a minute, that was you. And it just wasn't. It wasn't. I mean, like the ball, you know, it was a physical match. It was and it was great. I mean, and I thought Omar played brilliantly running back and tackling in, but he picked up a yellow. So our understanding is this was the last match that if you got five yellows, you get a ban. This was last one. So he's picked up a yellow, and we believe he's going to be suspended for the Chesterfield game, unless maths that we haven't worked out.
Well, the rules say it's 19 games, not 19 weeks, and this Saturday's game was the 19th game, and it says after the 19th game. So from what I can understand is that it was literally in the last few minutes, and I think it was a little bit of a silly thing, so it's just a frustrating. So yeah, it sounds like that unfortunately if he'd waited a couple more minutes, he would have been into the next round where you can have 10 yellows. Instead, he's reset and gets a one game ban, which is frustrating because, like you say, he again played his socks off. I mean, Omar is, I mean, I like him so much anyway, and then he's got better and better every game.
we know about your Omar Bugel fan club. I mean, Bugel, I'm going to get that right at some point.
We'll get him on, surely.
Yeah, no, he'd love to speak to us. I know that much. But he was brilliant, and you know, and again, because the last time Piggott played, I think he was, you could almost say he was at fault for the goals that lost, you know, that lost those goals.
I'm not saying anything.
I know. I know. As much as you like Bugel, I'm aware he's not on your Christmas list. So obviously, if we're going to stick to this system, and I believe we're going to have to, because we haven't got the players to go back to the, you know, the system that we wanted to play, JJ wants to play, it will mean...
But I think this is working better.
Well, it really is. I mean, but the fact is, if you can get this system right and you know the other system works well, then that's brilliant. We've got two things that we can play with. And you wouldn't want to drop Josh Kelly anyhow at the moment. I guess the only thing I was slightly worried about was, and it might just be the physical presence up front in the Doncaster lineup, that they were able to kind of push Oggs a bit about, weren't they? And then we like, you know, first chance where he completely missed the target from chipping the ball over. So we could, you know, we need a bit of strength. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if in January we do get another central defender, and then we need to get another defender. And then,
I think that's where you want to go, is like you want to get like a, I don't know how old footballers are supposed to be now, but like a 25 to 30 year old bruiser of a guy who's a defender who doesn't get knocked over for anything, and has the ability, which unfortunately happens to our players, where they just players just ping off you because they can't get past you because you're literally standing like a rock. I think that would be a sensible signing, just to have some big guy who you can't get by.
Yeah, someone like that, a bit of creativity in midfield, and I still think that we could do with someone else up front. I just feel that we could do with someone else.
I just don't see how we. I don't know who we'd attract. I mean, yeah, this. I don't see enough of League Two or League One or even the Conference National to work out whether there's some bright spark floating around. But maybe there's some sprightly young, you know, guy in the Conference National who sort of could do with a loan to us or whatever, you know, whatever they do in the transfer window. That might be cool. But I don't know. I'm sure Craig Cope is out there, like at every game, checking out these people.
Oh, he's on it. He's on it. I mean, again, you know, the whole thing from the D2B, the feed from the D2B that we've seen so far is that, again, is that we're looking to come out of January stronger than we go into it. And I know we say that every year, but that's the idea this time is we're going to be stronger this time. One can only hope. Omar is going to be a miss, I think, on Saturday against Chesterfield.
It's Chesterfield, isn't it? Which, again, like, that's a game we need to win, you know, because we've still got that game in hand.
We need not to lose that. I mean, an away point at Chesterfield would be a good result, because they are flying. You know, we're doing well as well. I mean, I don't think we're in a position to be set up to just play out a draw. But talking of this, so about our squad, because, you know, everyone talks about Goodman. I think Goodman is, everyone's slightly nervous about Goodman.
Well, at least Niall is. Not sure about everyone.
I don't think I don't think he had a save potentially to make
No, maybe not.
in that
Maybe.
in that second half against Doncaster. And he's kept, I believe, it's something like 9 clean sheets this season. So are we nervous about him? I mean, I have to say, I think our defence.
Okay, yeah, Doncaster had no shots on target, so you're right. They had no shots on target. Which, yeah, I mean, there were great shots to the left and right, but then none of them on target.
So, is he a problem? Is our goalkeeping a problem? I don't know. I mean, and if we were going to get someone in, how would we get someone who'd be better? That's an.
Okay, also the BBC stats make no sense because once you open the goalkeeper, it claims the goal that we made. What? That can't be right. Two saves. Oh, no, it's them. Okay. I was thinking, how did we do two diving saves? No, okay. So no saves, no diving saves, no save shots in the box, no save shot outside, no keeper throws, and nine goal kicks. So, yeah, no, nothing for him to
Yeah.
defend.
So our defence is doing a great job of shutting up shop, to be honest with you. And I thought Johnson played particularly, that's the best I've seen Johnson this season, I thought. I thought he was
Yeah, he. Yeah, you know, you're. I think you're right. Yeah.
great. It was really, really good this time. Anyhow, covering up a couple of other football things coming up. So I see that we've now got extra tickets for the Swindon game, the Boxing Day game.
Oh yeah.
I want to be slightly controversial here, Adam. This is going to be slightly controversial. I mean, Boxing Day football is like tradition, like you have your roast dinner on your Christmas, your presents on Boxing Day. But I'm not sure I'll be able to get over there because all the trains are stopped. I'm pretty sure you won't be able to get there.
But there's no trains. But that's the thing. It used to be, you used to have a Boxing Day special. There used to be a Boxing Day special, which would they put on trains to get you there, etc. And now there's no trains at all. So what happened to the Boxing Day specials? Like, I'd be there if there was a Boxing Day special, but
Well,
there
we need
isn't.
to write to someone. Wes Streeting or whoever it is.
Well, in theory, half of that's going to be nationalised. So South West Trains, which is my main train, that's going to be renationalised.
Yeah.
So I'd better just start writing now and say
Yeah,
Boxing Day specials.
get them back in the diaries. I just find it's difficult. I find, but
Oh, it's so annoying.
it's clear that obviously Swindon are not going to take a lot of people down. So there are tickets that have been released, I'm guessing, in the away end for us. And Swindon, I was thought quite well supported, so I thought they'd have always brought enough down. But I know they're going for a torrid time at the moment, so I can understand. So they're not going to have that. Not going to have.
And I think we can resell if we're season ticket holders. I think they're going to be up for resale. I saw that as an announcement, but I couldn't figure out if I could resell my ticket
I mean,
yet.
one of the things I'm seeing more and more on socials is people saying things like, "Oh, I just popped along to see my local club to play, and I had a great time. It's brilliant family atmosphere. It was really cool." Jackie Oakley is always shouting out about how family friendly our club is and how great it is to get along to it. So, my sense is that on Boxing Day there'll probably be a whole load of people there who are local to the area looking for something to do. Some reason to get out of the house and escape.
Actually, that is true. There should be some leaflet drop or whatever thing. Actually, any of the Don's Trust board members who are listening, we should be capitalising on the fact that there's no trains and we could go for get people in who are really really local who maybe just want to get out of the house.
Yeah, again, another brilliant idea, Adam. And like I said before, the Don's Trust board's loss is our game. So, we're always giving. Yeah, we know we were quoted, weren't we, in Don's Trust Board SGM. It was the same old Wombles clause. I can't remember what it was, but it was brilliant. We're getting old now. I can't remember what our brilliant ideas are.
I know what they are. We just got to leverage them once the people we, the more people we know are on the board, we can leverage. Yeah.
I it would tell you what would be cool. It'd be cool to get I mean, I think Ivor can't do it now. He's a Don's Trust board member. But I remember talking. I think he was talking about that. The first game that he went to was a Boxing Day game. He was his brother was going, and he kept on pestering his parents to go along and watch the game. So I think they went along. They were just around the corner, went along to watch the game, and that's what hooked him onto it. So, you know. Hopefully there'll be more local, more Ivers in the area who are going to sort of like say, "What am I going to do on Boxing Day?" Because you know, can be a bit boring for a youngster. Come along, they're not listening to this podcast, but come along and watch the Dons.
No, but seriously, I think that's actually a really valid point because loads of us who would need to get public transport to get anywhere near, we won't be able to get there. So long as we can set all our tickets up to resale, they've got an increased capacity, that'd be great.
And hopefully we will have a lot more local people come towards us. And I think, you know, we always have, you have to bear this in mind. This is, you know, people don't get this, but the capacity at King's Meadow was under 5,000. The capacity at Plough Lane is almost 8,000, and we are regularly getting over 7,000, you know, to watch our games. That's what we're getting to a point where our stadium might be too small for us. We might need to look quickly at building up. Certainly, if we go up another level, you know, there's going to be a capacity issue. So we, you know, we are attracting that local audience. Anyhow, the other thing that is going on, I noticed on the website, which I think is amazing, and we might talk about this a bit more next week, but on the 30th, they're doing a you know, remembering the Dons fans who've left us in the last year. And that is about the fans. And we have to remember this is what our club is. We're a fan-owned club. So there's going to be information in the programme and information, and there's going to be stuff up on the that's for the Gillingham game on the 30th. And there's going to be information put up on the screen as well. So
Why is that an 8 p.m. kickoff, by the way? Is it on TV or something weird, or?
I don't know. Maybe, but there is. But the thing is, so if,
I'm trying to figure out getting there
yeah,
myself,
if
but.
people have lost someone over the last year, then you know, Wimbledon fans, then contact the club, and that name could be in the program or on the on the screen. It's important that we remember the fans because that is the makeup of our club more than anyone else. We're the reason why our club exists. So I think that's a beautiful thing that we're doing on the 30th of December. Yes, so there is some great stuff happening. Great stuff. The club is doing. I think the club is doing starting to do well. The communications has got well. I love the idea of the extra tickets to Swindon for the Boxing Day. Hopefully, we'll get more local in for that. Loving the remembering on the 30th of December. I think that's a fantastic idea. And there's more stuff. And coming on to that, our I think our new board have just been sort of like put in place, and
Yeah, they're about, I think they're
they
starting
started. I
Monday
didn't know.
or
I didn't know
something.
whether
So, yeah.
they officially started the AGM, and which was obviously on the Monday that's gone. So the new people.
No, they didn't. I think it's the next Monday, weirdly, or something. There's, yeah, something to do with. Anyway, it's not, they haven't officially, they didn't officially start at the AGM. It was the old board at the AGM.
And what we would like to do at this particular point is tell you all about the AGM that happened on Monday, 16th of December. We would love, as we would love to do. I wasn't able to make it, and it falls on you. You have to give a full update on what happened at the Don's Trust AGM on the 16th of December. I'm excited to hear about this because we will be the first podcast out of the, you know, loads. We'll be the first. I think we're. I can't remember how official or unofficial. We'll be the first podcast this week to give the lowdown on the DTB AGM. What was said? What Craig Cope said? Because I know that people are dying to hear about that sort of stuff. Adam, over to you.
Okay, so the first thing to recognise is the section with Craig Cope couldn't be live streamed because of a change between the AGM and the PLC meetings. So unfortunately, all I heard was one person on the microphone. I think it was Angus saying, "Craig, yeah, Craig, we'll get you in a minute." And then it went off. But they'd already explained that, and they hoped that in the future they will be able to live stream Craig, but they couldn't this time because of technical things they had to change around or whatever. So I didn't hear the Craig Cope thing because that was not live streamed and I couldn't be there in person. Thank you. Just clearing that up. No. So anyone who was there, hopefully they'll, I don't know, release something. Maybe there's a recording of it. I don't know. Anyway, so then I didn't quite get home as soon as I expected and didn't quite do my dinner as soon as expected, which was slightly annoying because I'd not managed to proxy vote, which, again, for all of our listeners who are really interested in this stuff, when you have a proxy vote, you can choose to instruct the chairman to vote in a yes, you can instruct the chairman to vote a no, and sometimes in the past you've been able to instruct the chairman to vote on their instincts. And so for anyone who's still confused about the proxy vote thing, you can actually instruct the chairman to vote in the way that you want. But I totally didn't. I missed emailing in that stuff. So I thought I'd join live and vote, and then I was too late to join the live vote. So by the time I joined, I don't know what section it was in. It must have been the last half an hour. The actual AGM finished early, so obviously voting had gone well. And then mainly there was a bit of a conversation about the fact that we are currently in a legal dispute for something between 400,000 and half a million pounds worth of owed funds from another company, and the board have pressed a number of times on this, but of course they can't talk about it because there's loads of legal ramifications, etc. So it was a little bit frustrating because I arrived again at the moment where the board seemed to be getting a load of stick for stuff that I felt was a little unfair, and so I mainly saw that going on. Obviously, Mark was there, Alex was there on the board. I saw that Martin was running the microphone. I understand from what was Angus said that a bunch of the new board members were in the room, and there was some commentary about ensuring transparency around funding, you know, finances and all that kind of stuff, which everyone really thought was good. My report on the AGM is like, I hope the votes went the way that the Don's Trust board wanted. I'm sorry I didn't manage to figure out how to vote in time. Things just got away with me. And again, I think we've talked a bit about this and the way that AGMs and SGMs run and how we make them more inclusive and useful, etc. And it did feel a little bit, again, combative. And Matthew, you've talked about this, the way that it's set up, that you have like the table of all the, you know, the 12... or whatever apostles at the top, and you get the, you know, the crowd get a little bit agitated with some of the responses. And it was a little bit, again, frustrating that I felt that the Don's Trust board did a good job, especially as there was a number there who were, it would be their last meeting, and I didn't feel there was a lot of, I don't know, I felt there could have been some love for that, you know.
It's a shame, mainly because, you know, the 12 apostles thing, that is really much more of an Easter thing that people need to be thinking about. We need to be thinking Christmas. Sort of like, you know,
I'm not going to suggest anyone look like Father Christmas. That would be bad. You know, yeah. No one was drinking Coca-Cola. No one was dressed in red and white. It was fine.
Yeah. What a three wise men. It doesn't feel like that was, but I mean, that's my personal thought, is that really it needs to be much more inclusive, because, you know, if they have a table.
I can give an exclusive in a minute. So come back to me.
Oh, I'm excited by this. But I think the way the structure that those meetings work is needs to be different. Personally, I think you need to be amongst it more, rather than having people up there, because that was an easy way to point at people to say, and the truth is that Don's Trust board are fans, and everyone in that room is a fan. So you need to sit amongst it. You need to be amongst it rather than rather than pulling people up. And you can run those sessions in different ways, and you can have different, you can have visuals as well, which they don't have. There's other ways of getting information across, because I think it becomes very dull. And certainly I don't think you're attracting younger fans. I mean, who's giving up on Monday evening to sit in a board meeting for, 3 hours? So I think the structures of those meetings need to be looked at. But hey, I think it's easy on this side, when you're playing. We need to think about what that structure would look like and how it could work. But I certainly think having the Don's Trust members scattered around in the tables as well, so that people can talk on that table and stuff like that, and it reduces that competitive thing, that combative.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right, and I think there's legitimate discussions to be had. But I don't know, if you had a Don's Trust member at each sort of table and people gathered and they were talking about a specific topic, but each table's talking about it, and then the then there's a the members report back as to kind of the discussion on the table really quickly, then you probably get more voices in the room, so it wouldn't be the people who just kind of are up for getting the mic, because that's quite intimidating, I would say. And so if you then said, okay, this is the conversations, because we're having five tables or whatever, then you could kind of, yeah, you could turn it into a different type of AGM. I don't see why that isn't possible if it's just to debate a particular topic. And I think, again, based on a lot of things I've worked on and whatever, is that the confident people will speak up and they'll put their hand up to grab a mic, and that doesn't, that will obviously not give the whole room's voice. And I suspect, though, a lot of people that turn up to that are quite confident in that scenario. But if you were to say to a bunch of people who are less engaged, maybe younger, etc., okay, we're going to put you in a room and there's going to be something to debate, and the only way you can ask questions is by raising your hand and using a microphone, you are definitely discriminating against a bunch of people. And so I think if we want to engage more fans, younger fans, different fans, then there are ways to do that. And there are other mechanisms to gather the feedback in the room anonymously to allow a small conversation to happen, which I don't think would break the rules of what is required of an annual general meeting. So I think, I think that. Yeah, I think we should probably push on that, actually, because I think that does. Because thinking about who gave voice to the very bits that I heard at the last meeting, and I have obviously tried to watch the others and have become frustrated with them, it is the same voices. And the reason for that is because they are confident to take a microphone in a room of 50 people, which, isn't a lot of people, but that's very intimidating for I would say the majority of people.
I agree. I mean, I think I need to we need to think about this, but there could be a way of doing it. I mean, I've sat in so many, working in local authorities and things like that, I've sat in so many board meetings, and there are some really innovative things that come across. And I talk about this thing called theory of change, which I think the club needs to look at doing itself to see about how it progresses. Anyhow, we're getting in. This is the bit that people tune into. You don't get this on the other podcast. The minutiae of board meetings. So can I come to you now? What is your exclusive? I'm excited. This is the moment. What's
So,
going on?
okay, so this is the exclusive, is that Pro Boards
Yep.
is going to be sunsetted on the 31st of December. And on the 1st of January,
Yes.
we will have a new platform to engage our fans with.
Can it be even more, blocking? Can it be even more impenetrable than Pro Boards?
They wouldn't reveal the platform. However, I'm pretty confident I know what the platform is based on the conversation. So the exclusive is that I'm going to pre-reveal what I suspect the platform is going to be. Yeah. Well, so the conversation was that we've got a new platform. It's going to be more inclusive. It's aimed at a younger target audience. They have experience with this platform before, etc. I obviously work with a number of young people who use platforms. And so I am going to suggest strongly that the platform that the Don's Trust have chosen to move forward on the 1st of January is a platform called Discord.
TikTok, Discord. Damn it. TikTok.
Not TikTok.
That would be hilarious. Discord. Okay, you heard it here first, people. Discord, which bizarrely I just feel sums up a lot of the meetings and activity on
Discord,
global
yeah.
Discord, I think.
I'm on so many Discords. For anyone who's semi-interested, if you have used something like Microsoft Teams or Slack, Discord is a platform of a similar value that has ha gained a ton of traction in the gaming community air market, and it tends to be the vast majority of Discords that are out there are people interested in a particular game, and there's a whole community around that channel. So it's quite interesting, but it's not a forum, it's more of a chat space with channels. So I'll be interested to see how that pans out. Wouldn't have been my platform of choice for some of the specific things we want to do, but it certainly is.
What would you have gone with? What would you have gone with, Adam? Because you were close. What would you have gone with?
So I would have gone with something called Discourse, which is a
Yeah, all the days.
yeah which is a which the dog my dog's going mad which is a forum, but it has a lot more recent features than pro boards. I think a forum is useful and is different to a chat and conversation platform like a Teams or a Slack or a Discord. So we'll see how this pans out. It does depend heavily, and I know George has done a load of work on this. And so it does depend heavily on how they set the Discord up and how they moderate it and the way they set up the channels and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see. But that's my guess. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I've got a lot of faith in George. I think he's, and obviously, since being sacked from his last podcast, I think he's done brilliantly. He's gone on from strength to strength.
No, I think, like, seriously, I don't want to make that really clear on this podcast. I don't know if George probably won't, but I think George is awesome. He's been doing some amazing things for the Secretariat, the review of the Constitution, all that kind of stuff. And I know that himself and another Rhys were tasked with looking at how they move away from what is clearly a very old platform, at least in terms of what we want to do and how we then engage. And choosing a service like Discord certainly has an appeal to a younger audience. My only framing of it is I'm concerned about how it functions in terms of like churn. It's more like chat and less about Q&As and that kind of stuff. So it would be interesting to see how we move forward.
That's cool. Oh, thank you. That's exclusive. That's an exclusive. I'm
It may
excited by
be,
that.
I may be wrong. I may be
But
completely wrong.
some people look for exclusive, who we're going to sign or formations. No, this is we're in the detail, my friends. Right. Anyhow, so listen, I just want to close off with a couple of bits and bobs. So the women's team are winning ways. They all had a 1-0 victory on the weekend. They're steadying the ship mid-table, which I think is great, considering. And I'm pretty sure that the idea is to stabilise and hopefully push on. It looks like Ipswich, who are top of the league, are flying at the moment. But what is interesting is if you look at the bottom of the league that we're in, the women's team is in, there's a certain side from Buckinghamshire who really aren't doing very well. I think they've only got 1 point. Bless their
My
kind
eyes
little.
don't go that far down.
Yeah, exactly. We don't, But great, the women's team are doing brilliantly. And I'm just and that it's exciting. I mean, I think it's exciting that we've got a women's team. They play their brains at plan. And again, we keep talking about this. We're gonna watch the one, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Matt, we need to sort out this because I was looking at the next three games and they're all at Rains Park again. I'm like, when is the next game at Plough Lane? Because we have to get to the game. Otherwise, we are really going to have to shut down the whole podcast if we don't manage it.
We will do it. We will do it. And the last thing, and I know that Monfrere would badger me if we didn't talk about this, but the governance bill is still going through. It's still the Tory peers are picking apart. So it's obviously to know, obviously, the sense is that there's one Tory peer who is in the pockets of the Premier League and is doing all they can to really sort of like to battle every single thing that's gone on. They are talking about the what's called the Wimbledon clause, and that clause is that a club can't move more than 5 miles away from its conurbation without a majority of fans' approval, which I think is great. I think there should be an addition. I think there should be an amendment to that. Personally, I think that all clubs shouldn't be allowed to move without 5 miles without the fans' say, except one club. There should be one club that has to move every 5 years at least 70 miles away north. Every 5 years. That's what I think. One club should be the exception.
I'm not even going to say anything. But what I will say, because I think, again, yeah, Niall would be annoyed if we didn't talk about this. So there was a news article in The Independent, which included Lord Blunkett talking about what had been going on. And I just want to read what the paper is quoting him as saying, because I just think it's quite amusing. So he's saying, having sat through parts of Committee 1 and 2, I've heard exactly the same arguments this afternoon as I've heard on the previous groups, including, what is a definition of football? What do we mean by competition? And even, what is fairness? And then he went on to say, overdo this and you will do so at your peril, because at some point fans, millions of fans out there, might actually learn what's going on with this filibuster that's taking place in this house. And when they do, they will be very angry. Well, thankfully, Lord Blunkett being quoted, he's already pointed out the fact that we all know what's going on. And we are already angry. And we're already annoyed with what's happening. So I don't think, you know, I don't think we need to worry as much as we want, because if they don't get through this, there's loads more people that are going to be angry than the few silly people in the House of Lords. So I hope it works out to as many of the things that, you know, Niall has been battling on, etc., and that it makes sense. But, well, you know, everyone I've spoken to, whatever level of football fan they are, constantly is like, there's something up with football. And those who are in the know about the governance bill are saying, with this might have the ability to make some changes that will be useful. So I don't, you know, whoever's spending all the time talking to slow this bill down, we already know. You are already in the pockets of billionaires who want to slow things down for whatever reason they think is useful. And we've already discussed it on this podcast many times. Football is more than a business. It's a community asset, and it needs to be understood as that. And we've gone on too long and too far down this horrendous capitalist football route we need to stop now. So hopefully this will kind of sort things out. And it's, yeah, you know, I love it, the fact that he said, if fans hear about this, you know, they're going to be angry. And we already know about it. We know about it. Thank you.
Dear listener, if you didn't know beforehand, you now know exactly where we stand on the political spectrum on this issue and most others. Yeah, I mean, it is wrong. I mean, listen, the final word on this is, if you want to know where football is at the moment, Saudi Arabia is going to be hosting the 2030 World Cup. They were unopposed, because there were such conditions put in place. Australia were looking at going for it. They didn't, because they had less than a month to put a bid together. I mean, it's a fuss. And that tells you all you need to know about the governance of football. And that is at the top. And it flows all the way down. It's obviously incredibly lucrative. There are property deals involved with it. There's a whole load of other things that go with it. If Niall was here, which he isn't, he could tell us a bit more. But still, there will be more talk about football governance. There'll be more talk about the Don's Trust Board. Hopefully, more talk about positive things on the pitch as well. But that is us for this week. Many thanks to the producer, Adam Proctor. I've been Matt Cooper, intermittently. We are the same old Wombles. We were back.
Might not